Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami Ngaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Monday, the 11th of March, we have some current affairs stories shared with us by NITV's NOLA program, including news the Australian Olympic athletes will wear uniforms featuring Indigenous designs, and a young fella who is embarking on a trek across Australia to raise funds for the Indigenous Literacy Foundation. Also, polling booths have opened in South Australia, with the state's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people electing representatives to South Australia's Indigenous Voice to Parliament, an Australian first. In your program today, we also hear from Terrell Berryman, an Ulubui man, sharing his experience in studying screen and media through fee-free TAFE program. All these stories and more coming to you after the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
This bulletin, the Northern Territory has announced an ambitious plan to boost the number of First Nations police. The government announces it will scrap 500 nuisance tariffs. And extreme heat continues across southeast Australia. The Northern Territory's top cop has announced an ambitious plan to boost the number of First Nations police on the beat. Police Commissioner Michael Murphy says he wants the force to better reflect Northern Territory society, where 30% of the population is Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. Commissioner Murphy has also banned the Elite Territory Response Group from handing out a satirical award that carried a racist slur in its title. He says the new employment target will help stop racism in the force.
So my aspirational target and set, and it's quite aggressive, is that whilst it'll be gradual, is to have a workforce that's 30% Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. And I want them to own it, and I want them to come to me and form a group that can actually share their experiences and actually be empowered to create pathways through the workforce at ranks.
Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers has announced the government will scrap around 500 so-called nuisance tariffs on a range of goods, including washing machines, shoes and tampons. A nuisance tariff is a tax so low it costs more for the government to collect it than the revenue it generates. The government has announced it will cut the 5% tariff on 500 imported goods as part of what Dr. Chalmers has said is the biggest reform of the tariff system in decades. In a speech to his year's Financial Review Business Summit, he has said removing the tariffs will streamline around $8.5 billion worth of annual trade.
It will save businesses more than $30 million in compliance costs each year, 120 over the next four. It will simplify the system, reduce costs, improve supply chain resilience, and make it easier and cheaper for business. And also, and I don't want to overstate this bit, it will provide a bit of extra help with the cost of living challenge by making everyday items just that little bit cheaper.
National's MP Barnaby Joyce has criticised the government's new vehicle efficiency standards, arguing electric vehicles are not suited to the Australian context. The new regulations are designed to encourage car companies to sell more fuel-efficient vehicles, including making electric vehicles more available and competitive. But in exchange with Environment Minister Tanya Plibersek on January 7's Sunrise, Mr. Joyce has said electric vehicles are useless in Australia.
Australia's a big nation, 26 million people, and the size of Western Europe. We're completely different to other nations, where they're small, compact, overwhelmingly in a lot of places in Europe, flat. Now, we have different requirements, which means we'd like four-wheel drives. We have to use them for not only work, but for recreation, for family purposes. We've got long distances to cover. And the cost of getting into these things is exorbitantly more different than the cost of the vehicles that are currently there.
The new standards will come into effect next year, introducing emissions targets for fleets of new cars and charging car companies for exceeding that target. The new standards only apply to new vehicles and don't dictate what kinds of cars Australians can buy. The president of Ukraine has hit back at Pope Francis after the Catholic leader made comments encouraging Ukraine to negotiate an end to the war with Russia. Ukraine and its allies have criticized the Pope for saying Kiev should have the courage of the white flag, a statement many interpreted as a call on the country to surrender. Volodymyr Zelensky made no direct reference to Francis or his comments, but mentioned religious figures helping inside Ukraine.
I thank every Ukrainian chaplain who is with the army, in the defense forces, on the front line, defending life and humanity. They support us with prayer, with talk and with deeds. This is what the church with the people is, not 2,500 kilometres away, somewhere to mediate virtually between someone who wants to live and someone who wants to destroy you.
Other European politicians, including the Latvian president and Polish foreign minister, have also criticised Pope Francis's comments. The Palestinian Civil Defence Group says all 10 members of a family living in Tal al-Hawa, west of Gaza City, have been killed in an aerial attack by Israel. The group published a video on Sunday showing rescue teams pulling lifeless bodies from the rubble and wrapping them in blankets. News agency Reuters was not able to independently verify the location or the date when the video was filmed. United States President Joe Biden has expressed his disappointment at the loss of civilian lives and says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu must do more to protect civilians.
He has a right to defend Israel, a right to continue to pursue Hamas, but he must pay more attention to the innocent lives being lost as a consequence of the actions taken. He's hurting, in my view, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world, it's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake. So I want to see a ceasefire.
Palestinians are preparing for Ramadan amid heightened security measures by Israeli police. The conflict and the possibility of widespread famine in Gaza are overshadowing the normally festive Muslim holy month as talks to secure a ceasefire have stalled. Meanwhile, the Israeli government says news it is threatening holy sites like the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the Muslim month of fasting and reflection is false. Police say they will secure the area in order to ensure a peaceful Ramadan. They have arrested 20 people they suspect of inciting terrorism so far. Government spokesman Rakela Karamson says the same number of worshippers will be allowed into the mosque in East Jerusalem as in previous years. Al-Aqsa is one of the holiest sites in the world for Muslims. It's also revered by Jews as a vestige of their two ancient temples. At least 19 people have been killed and 7 others are missing after torrential rains triggered flash floods and a landslide on Indonesia's Sumatra Island. Tons of mud, rocks and uprooted trees rolled down a mountain late on Friday, reaching a river that burst its banks and tore through mountainside villages in the West Sumatra province. Head of the local disaster management agency, Doni Yusrival, said rescuers pulled out 7 bodies on Saturday in the worst-hit village and recovered 3 others in neighboring villages. Rescuers retrieved 6 bodies in one area and another 3 in a neighboring district, bringing the death toll to 19. More than 80,000 people have fled to temporary government shelters after the flood and landslide buried 14 houses. Some 20,000 houses were flooded up to the roof in 9 districts and cities in West Sumatra province. And back home, southwest Victoria is on alert for extreme fire danger as the heatwave continues to scorch the southeast of Australia. The Country Fire Authority warns residents in the southwest fire district should activate their bushfire survival plans and monitor news for updates. Cooler conditions are expected from the west during the late afternoon and evening. Senior meteorologist Sarah Scurry has told ABC there was little relief for people trying to sleep in South Australia and Victoria over the weekend.
It's been around 10 to 15 degrees above average, and that's both the minimums and the maximums right across southeastern Australia over this long weekend. Look, there have been some records broken, in particular that's been really hot nights. Melbourne's had a number of March overnight minimum temperature records broken, and there's also been some maximum temperatures.
Ms. Scully said it's not until Wednesday or Thursday that Victoria will see a significant cool change across the state. Australia's Sport Integrity Chief says sport leaders must stop downplaying racism amid a fresh wave of vilification claims. Sport Integrity Australia Chief Executive David Sharp has said athletes guilty of racism should face the same lengthy penalties given to fans in similar situations. He says attitudes won't change until sport brands and their sponsor are willing to drive a cultural shift. Mr. Sharp's comments come after a week when the AFL joined the NRL and Football Australia in being linked to racism claims. And to the NRL now, North Queensland have taken top spot on the NRL ladder after defeating the Dolphins in a 43-18 win. The Cowboys scored 5 first-half tries to lead 13-12 at the break in a display of speed and skill, delivering exactly what coach Todd Payton had called for after the team missed out on last year's finals. The Dolphins suffered an injury when second rower Koneli Lemuelu left the field just before halftime with a knee injury. The new Cowboys center Zach Lebert was outstanding. The Papua New Guinea international sliced through defense, scoring in the second minute. And now looking at the weather around the country, Broome, scattered thunderstorms, a top of 32, Perth, sunny 31, Adelaide, mostly sunny 38, Melbourne, similar conditions, also 38 degrees, Hobart, cloudy 26, Albury, Wodonga, also cloudy 31, Canberra, partly cloudy 31, Wollongong, also partly cloudy 27, Sydney, similar conditions 29, Newcastle, partly cloudy 29, Brisbane, a shower or two 29, Townsville, possible showers 31 degrees, Cairns, a shower or two, 31, Alice Springs, sunny, 35, Darwin, showers and a possible storm on a top of 31, and the Torres Strait Islands, isolated thunderstorms and a top of 29 degrees. And that is NITV Radio News.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
And that was We Don't Talk About It. It's a song by Thelma Plum, a poignant statement on the culture of silence in Australia, raping open the underbelly of abusive relationships and asking us all to do better. You're listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from NAM this Monday afternoon, and I'm Bertrand Tungandami. In your program today, well, polling booths have opened in South Australia, with the state's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people electing the first state-based Indigenous voice to Parliament in any state in Australia. Also, Tyrell Berryman, an Ulumbui man, shares his experience in studying screen and media through fee-free TAFE program. But first, some current affairs stories from an Indigenous perspective shared with us by NITV's NOLA program.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Now imagine walking across Australia on your own with everything you need to survive in a hard cart. That's what a 22-year-old First Nations man is doing to raise money for the Indigenous Literacy Foundation. Karen Cox caught up with him as he took his first steps on an epic transcontinental journey.
Proud Warramai man Bailey Myers is embarking on the journey of a lifetime, walking from the west coast to the east coast.
I'll be walking from Perth to Newcastle over the next 5 to 7 months. Starting from today, I'll be touching the water along the coast here at North Mooloolooloo Beach in Perth, and then I'll be making my way back. It will be approximately over 5,000 kilometres, and I'll be doing it walking alone with my trusty cart here.
His cart is decorated with the handprints of Indigenous students from his old school, and he hopes to add more along the way. It has taken months of work to build the cart, which is fitted with everything to survive on the road. Starting his journey in Perth, he'll be trekking his way to Kalgoorlie, across the Nullarbor Plain into South Australia, and up into Queensland, where he will conclude the trip in his hometown of Newcastle in New South Wales. His aim, to fundraise $20,000 for the Indigenous Literacy Foundation.
The Indigenous Literacy Foundation just does incredible work through elevating our Indigenous youth, through education, through connection to culture, and every single dollar just does such important, essential work within those local Indigenous communities. And so I would really implore everyone to donate where they can. $5 can mean so much.
Supporting Indigenous literacy, one step at a time. Karen Cox, NITV News.
Now, the Australian Olympic Committee has unveiled the uniforms that athletes will wear for the Games in Paris later this year. A major part of the kit, as NITV's Ricky Kirby says, is the Indigenous artwork blended through every piece.
Weaved alongside the iconic green and gold of Australia's uniform at this year's Olympics will be Indigenous culture. Artworks done by Olympic boxer Paul Fleming and Torres Strait artist David Boson feature on every item across the range of performance gear, each telling their own stories. It comes after Fleming's design was featured on one of the team's shirts for the last Olympics in Tokyo.
To see designs from those artists put into the Tokyo team was something that made me super proud, and I thought, you know, will they embrace this? Will they enjoy having Indigenous design? But yep. To my surprise, they said, we want more. We want more. And so now with Paris, I'm excited that there's going to be more Indigenous design.
Rugby Sevens player Maurice Longbottom and Matilda's goalkeeper Lydia Williams were at the launch sporting the new kit.
Special. I'm so excited about it. And remember speaking before Tokyo about having just one shirt, maybe having some Indigenous print incorporated in our playing gear, and I couldn't be happier.
It's amazing. I'm so excited that, you know, we get to wear this amazing kit with, again, Indigenous design imprinted all over it. But, yeah, for this to be available and goalkeepers not feeling left out is definitely an exciting thing.
Proud Wiradjuri woman Mariah Williams says it's uplifting to have the design on the team uniform.
I feel like it's a very unique thing and something I hold quite close to my heart. But, yeah, I feel like I'm not also representing our beautiful country, I'm also representing my Indigenous culture. Yep. And I'm sure everyone on this stage and all the athletes going to Paris, wears it and feels like they're empowered and, proud of our nation and our history.
More than 460 athletes across 30 different sports will be wearing the designs when they compete at the Games beginning in July. Ricky Kirby, NITV News.
Now, legendary Australian singer-songwriter Paul Kelly has paid a visit to inmates at a remote Western Australian jail. The visit coming after Kelly had a group of First Nations prisoners cover one of his best-known songs. Felicity O'Gilvy has the story.
The band called East Sunrise has covered Paul Kelly's song How to Make Gravy. The lyrics are about a prisoner missing his family, something these men experience.
Just tell our stories to the young ones out there and families. Important. Keta is a very big part in Aboriginal culture.
performing for Paul Kelly in Pijanjara and English.
I really loved it.
After admiring the band, Paul Kelly performed his song.
I'll be out here by July.
Asking one of the guitarists to join him.
You go to a special place when you play guitar, you know, music. It's like mentally, physically, and it helps with everything.
When you make music with someone, you make something that you couldn't do by yourself. So also music is a way of, it's a universal language. And when they, the good example is their recording of the song. There's a couple of different languages in there, but the feeling still comes across.
The prisoners want to keep performing.
We might start making new songs and keep building the bridges again, you know, start a new life.
I hope you're keeping well.
Sharing stories through song. Felicity Ogilvie, NRTV News.
And that ends the stories from NOLA, NITV's program focusing on current affairs from an Indigenous perspective. Next, in South Australia, voting has started for the inaugural representatives in SA's Indigenous Voice to Parliament.
NITV Radio, on radio, online and mobile.
There's a new crew in the playground. Are you ready?
You can't spell ready without Eddie, so let's get to it.
And we want you to be part of the game.
Awesome! Yes! Big dog, why don't you take it away?
Oh. So come on, bring your imagination, because best friends always have the best fun.
Stop!
Unauthorized use of a ladder in a public area.
Well, nearly always.
We're Freddy's little homies.
NITV Radio. Share our stories on Facebook.
Now, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people living in South Australia will soon cast their vote to elect the first state voice to Parliament in the country. Last March, the state legislated a model for an Indigenous voice to Parliament ahead of the national referendum on a voice to federal Parliament. Peter Doherty explains how it will work and why the candidates think it will be a good thing for community.
Voice that I look on a colony Mulaba Anango Kungana
Pijanjara Yankunjara woman Melissa Thompson explains why she wants to represent her community on South Australia's Voice to Parliament. She says she's been training to be a leader since she was a young girl. Her late father, land rights activist Mr. Thompson, signed the document that returned 10% of South Australia to the Ananul people in the far northwest. It was an unprecedented achievement for self-determination. And four decades on, his daughter hopes to represent the Ananul, Pijanjara, Yankunjara communities in another national first, South Australia's inaugural voice to Parliament.
Back then, my father was a person that was a role model for the people in the lands, which he most spoke about people through government and fight for his people. Now that I am, as a daughter, willing to stand my authority to become a role model for my generation, so when, you know, with my kind heart and with what I've rolled so many things in my life and my walk in this life was being a leader and looking after people.
She hopes the voice will make communities strong again.
You know, it's like a net that's broken underneath and the fishes are swimming out. As a leader, we need to make the net strong so we can keep our people inside our net so that we can build and more services and more happiness that we're rolling to make a better bridge, the fresh bridge that we can walk on.
She is one of 113 candidates declared last week. Under the SA Voice model, communities will be represented by a local voice made up of representatives from six regions. Regional divisions will elect seven people, while the more heavily populated central region will elect 11. Each local region will choose a male and a female delegate to make up the state voice. The voice will have a direct line to state parliament, cabinet and government agencies about policy and matters of concern to their communities. It will also establish committees to hear from young people, elders, the stolen generation and native title.
I think the whole country will be looking at this, and that's why it's so important for us to continue to go ahead and demonstrate to the rest of the country why this is so important.
That's Kimberly Wanganeen, a Bowendick woman from the state's southeast, who now lives in Adelaide and is a candidate for the central region. She runs a consultancy business that trains government and businesses how to create culturally safe workspaces. She hopes to use her experience in how the levers of policy and legislation create change to make the first voice a success.
Look, I think the inaugural voice will be integral to listening to the voices of community first to see what they would like to see achieved in the first 2 years. Personally, I'm involved in the prevention of violence against Aboriginal women and children. So I imagine that that will be quite a key focus for community as well, because Aboriginal women are disproportionately impacted by violence.
Here's another candidate, Kerry Coulthard, who hopes to represent her community in the Flinders Ranges.
I'm an Adnyamutna woman from Hawke in the Flinders Ranges. I'm excited to nominate for SA Voice to Parliament because we know what our community want, we know what our community needs, as each community is different. So I'm excited if we can work together. It means a healthy country, healthy families and for a healthy future.
Elections will be held every 2 years. Only Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders are eligible to vote on March 16.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
Yama Nayaga Milare Mia Ruby, and you're listening to NITV Radio.
Next, the story on how studies in screen media have opened doors of opportunity for our next guest.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
I'm joined by Tyrell Berryman, a screen and media student at Bachelor Institute, to talk about fee-free TAFE education and career pathways. Tyrell, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Nice to be here, Ben.
Now, Tyrell, can you share with us your journey leading up to your current studies, studying screen and television?
My TAFE class started just after I left high school. Completed year 12 and I joined this Aboriginal study group called IYP. They first got me interested in media. I saw the opportunity and I decided to take it because I thought it would be a interesting sort of life path I can actually see myself doing.
So you chose screen and media, and this has led you to exciting outcomes. You've interviewed celebrities, you've done a lot, and you're on your way to actually a successful career in media and screen.
Yeah, I've done too. I've gone to different music festivals, different Aboriginal festivals, and with the whole screen and media gig, I've even gone into some Netflix TV show that's going to be coming out this year.
And you also interviewed First Nations journalists last year when there was a big gathering in Canberra at Converge. Yeah, tell us about your experience at Converge.
It was just such a lovely place. Seeing so much professionals actually walking about, talking about their work-related places, and actually getting to understand what it actually takes to get into the media business was really, really educational when I was having my time there. And especially since we were working behind the scenes at the end.
Yeah.
We ended up doing the whole tech work that was the sound testing and the camera testing. It was really interesting and really fun.
Yeah. And you are from Nullumbu, if I'm not wrong, and you're doing your studies at the Bachelor Institute in Darwin, the Northern Territory.
Yeah, I mean, I do my studies in Bachelor just outside of Darwin, but yeah. I do live in Darwin now. But I am a Yolngu Mata man,
yeah.
So I'm Nullumbu doing my intermediate studies.
And how is a Bachelor treating you? Because I gather it's one of the institutes, Qatar's very powerfully for First Nation alumni.
It's definitely a unique place. Not any places that I've been to before, and it's pretty fun to be there and to actually get to know other people in my classroom and their life stories and how it took them to get into screen media as well. It is just such a comforting place to be at.
And coming back to your journey with, through TAFE, how did you learn about the program, the fee-free program, and join it?
I actually got it recommended to me by one of my friends in the same program because we went to high school together, and he kind of told me about the whole experience and all that, and it kind of just rang a sort of interest in me, and I just decided to say, hey, if he's enjoying it, why don't I give it a shot? Let's just see where this goes and take me.
And would you recommend it to other like friends or family?
I would definitely recommend it. It's definitely a more social kind of workplace. So you've got to be ready to talk and chat to celebrities or anyone that's important that we have to cover over. Or if you're not that talkative, you can always work behind the scenes on cameras and all that. And it has a different range of sets of areas that people that are not very social or people that are social are able to really put themselves out there.
And where to from here? Do you see yourself more in media or screen producing movies and documentaries?
I can definitely see myself doing more of a media kind of role, possibly even being like a spokesperson sort of, because I love to talk, I love to chat, I love to talk all the time. And yeah, in the future I could probably see myself being a interviewer / spokesperson.
Yeah. So we've got someone to walk in our footsteps. So good to hear you love media, because as a radio person myself, a veteran broadcaster, I'm really always excited to hear that there's another generation following my footsteps. Really good choice there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, before I let you go, anything you'd like to add?
I can really see this entire media entertainment gig really pop up for me, and if other people would want to be recommended to it, I really do recommend starting at Bachelor, doing the screen and media course there. It's really professional, but it's not professional enough that it's going to make you struggle. It's a comforting piece of learning that any person, Aboriginal or not, can really get into, and I would definitely recommend going to Bachelor. It's just really get your hands deep and see where it takes you.
Well, Tyrell, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on NITV Radio. It's been a really, really a great pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me, Bert.
Hey, guys, Jackie White here, proud Wiradjuri man. You're listening to NITV Radio. Let's go.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio, and we're broadcasting from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. Just before our next story, a reminder that extreme heat is forecast to continue across Australia's southeast for several days as Tasmania recorded its hottest night in 112 years on Saturday, the 9th of March, and record temperatures on Sunday across South Australia, Victoria, Tasmania and southern New South Wales caused the cancellation of long weekend events. And in the meantime, in Western Australia, the Bureau of Meteorology has maintained its severe weather warning for eastern parts of the state due to significant amounts of rain. Heavy to intense rainfall may cause life-threatening flash flooding over the southeast of WA from the southern interior to the Yokla area. And now our next story, how to reverse type 2 diabetes through diet and exercise.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Our topic this week is real foods. Would you be able to tell us about the health issues currently in the community, such as diabetes, and what would be your first advice to reducing the current numbers?
I think one of the easiest things for most people to implement really quickly around health or good health will be the fact that if they can include as much real food, meaning something that hasn't been processed, fried, or modified in any way, shape or form, or even made for that purpose, so they can then provide nutrients to their body and provide an environment internally that allows or minimises the amount of illnesses and diseases that we then come across. That's one of the most simple, easy and effective tips that you could give anyone, but gets neglected far too often.
So you're saying we should be eating nothing but real foods? Describe to us, what are the real foods?
I think the biggest thing I try and pass on to everyone I come across, it's very important to enjoy life. If we're forever eating real foods, we obviously will put ourselves in the best position around our health. But I also understand that I'm realistic, and people in general might catch up over a pizza to watch football as an example that's coming up. Or someone might even have a wine or an ice cream on a warm, hot day, as it has been over summer here. So it's very important to create a balance between both and make sure that that balance, a majority of that balance, is geared towards real foods, providing those nutrients I've spoken about, but also on the back end, making sure there's a balance there so it doesn't become too restrictive and it becomes more of a balanced, sustainable, healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, this reminds me of a book I was reading a few years back called In Defense of Food, and they say you should eat food that looks as closely as possible, or if not, just food in its natural state, like banana should look like a banana, an apple like an apple, and things like that, not the things that have undergone manufacturing and processes and all that.
You hit that nail on the head, and the more we can then include that simple yet effective tip, the less illness and disease we put ourselves in front of. As an example, I spoke to a marine biologist yesterday about fish, and it was really interesting to learn that fish that were caught and then obviously stressed out would then release toxins, from what I've got, and I hope I got that right from this marine biologist, within the body that then made them more obviously toxic to you than those that were snap frozen once they were caught, because there was less stress involved in the actual catching of that fish. Yeah. It was very, very interesting concept, but it shows you the more we can keep it as natural as possible, the less chance we are putting ourselves in the road of ill health. So,
and why is it important to eat real food over something that's processed? Can you give us some one or two examples?
I think one of the easiest ways I try and put this to people is always think about a pool and the fact that we just need this almost one ingredient, chlorine, to make sure that it stays nice and stable and we're able to swim in it, it looks nice and beautiful, versus during winter when we don't look after that and it starts to turn green from the inside out. And that's just from one thing that I know of, as I'm not a pool expert, but in general, for us, we need a whole heap of nutrients on a daily basis, and we're eating the rainbow, and we're eating that on a regular basis through real foods. We're more than likely going to create that nice, clean environment inside that people want to swim in as such, versus if we didn't look after ourselves with these unprocessed foods and junk foods and so forth, that would then make us green from the inside out, and obviously then put us, as I said, in the pathway of this big truck coming through with a whole heap of illness and disease.
Going back to diabetes, is it possible for a person who has been diagnosed actually with diabetes to improve their condition just through eating better food, healthy, eating real food?
I look at all the data, whether it's diabetes, heart disease, or even cancers, the more we eat these real foods, the less chance we are of illness and diseases, and we minimise the chance of actually falling sick. We want to make sure that our body is as alkaline as possible, so we're nice and strong and fresh, and the environment inside is in a stable condition, to put it probably the best way, to allow us to then live a healthier and a better life versus, obviously, when we put ourselves in a position where we're eating these foods that have been processed, making us green from the inside out, and it can have a massive impact on someone, especially with diabetes as an example, type 2 diabetes, where they can actually come off the medication that they're on just through the foods that they're actually putting into our mouth. So it's very important. Make the right choices around your foods, and it's quite simple. Just choose real foods as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, and is this a principle that you live by yourself, or...?
Well, having obviously an Aboriginal background, for me, it was a no-brainer. I look back to what our ancestors did, and I looked at a lot of their photos and how lean they actually were. And then I thought about what they did and how they, you know, how they ate. And you have to understand that a lot of the foods, there was no takeaway food shops going around back in the day. So everything that they ate was obviously as much as natural as possible and as real as you could possibly get. And you look at the photos, there's no gyms around at that time even. As I said, they were some of the leanest people I've ever seen in this world. So it's a no-brainer to use that same principle as my ancestors did and pass that on to everybody that I come in contact with so they can live their best life as well.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
That was Koori Man by Warumpi Ban. And this song, Koori Man by Warumpi Ban, brings us to the end of today's program. NITV Radio will be back on Wednesday and Friday with more stories from right across the country. I'm Bertrand Tunyandame, thanking you for your company this Monday afternoon. Till next time, bye for now. Yalu.